This week on the Backtable Podcast.
I think that it's something that almost seems intimidating, but we, IRs, we've done it in so many different other things that this is pretty low-hanging fruit for all of us. You know, you can do it to just be an extra kind of problem-solving tool. You can, you just see what your cardiologists are using with, you know, whatever they already have on formulary, and you can use that, right? I mean, it's just having the same medicine that's already in your hospital wherever you are and just using that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Backtable, your source for all things endovascular and more. You can find all of our episodes online on any platform you prefer, like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or directly through our website, backtable.com. First, a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is supported by ReFlow Medical. As makers of high-performance medical devices, ReFlow asks the question, what's in your toolbox? Leading physicians rely on ReFlow's suite of catheters for both peripheral and coronary procedures, the Wingman Crossing Catheter, Specs and Specs LP shapeable support catheters, and Cora catheters. It's all about providing solutions for unmet clinical needs. For more information, visit reflowmedical.com.
And now back to the show.
I'm Sabine as your host today, and I'm excited to welcome Dr. Dave Gez, an interventional radiologist from Boston University. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I mean, today we're going to be discussing two really interesting topics wrapped into one. I mean, at first, we're going to be talking about contrast-enhanced ultrasound, which, like myself and I'm sure a lot of my listeners, don't really know what that modality is, and then how it's used in the setting of endoleaks. So really cutting-edge stuff, really excited. But before we go there, Dave, tell us a little bit more about yourself. I mean, how did you get to Boston and how did you develop this interest in this modality?
Yeah, sure. So I first learned about contrast-enhanced ultrasound in my residency. I was at Thomas Jefferson in Philadelphia, where we use ultrasound contrast for a fair number of applications. This was in the early kind of 2010s. And there are a few kind of ultrasound gurus there that would use it for kind of pre-post ablation, evaluation, monitoring, and also just kind of lesion characterization. And then just kind of got exposed to it a little bit then during residency, and then had a few opportunities to kind of pull it off the shelf and use it in fellowship for some problem solving. And, you know, from there, once I went out into practice, I thought it would be kind of a nice thing to bring to my hospital, again, for some problem solving, for some possible research applications. And it's something that's been really accepted by some of the different docs that we work with.
Yeah, what kind of volume, I know that might be hard to answer, but how much contrast enhanced ultrasound are you doing in your practice right now?
Well, it's really more, I guess the better question is really, you know, in how many different applications are we using it for? I know one of the pediatric radiologists, she's using it for some liver lesion characterization, try to spare some of her younger patients from CTs, MRs, and we're using it for things like, you know, endoleak monitoring for liver lesions or other lesions if, you know, large masses, we want to try to stay away from like necrotic components and also kind of looking at, you know, ablation cavities, things like that. So I'd say we're probably using it a few times a month.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's a few times a month more than I use it. So that's great. So let's go into contrast enhanced ultrasound. I mean, all our listeners will know what ultrasound is, but what is contrast enhanced ultrasound and how does that work?
So with ultrasound contrast, there are three different agents here in the U.S., two of which are kind of need refrigeration. You know, you can find it in your echo labs. And then there's a third agent that that I use, which, you know, can be kept on the shelf, reconstituted via just kind of a three-way stopcock. And the one I use called Lumison, it's sulfur hexafluoride and kind of kept in this lipid shell. And when you reconstitute it with saline, they're like these micro bubbles. Each one is about the size of a red blood cell, kind of a good way to think about it. And it's a purely intravascular agent. So it shows, when you see it, kind of it shows some of the same characteristics that you would see with different, you know, enhancement agents. So, you know, you have scoring systems for LIRADs with contrast enhanced ultrasound. The Lumison that we use is also approved for, in addition to the cardiac applications like the other two agents, it's the only agent that's approved for liver lesion characterization, as well as pediatric applications to try and replace things like VCUG, right? So avoiding ultrasonography is what they're using it for.
So you mentioned bubbles and micro bubbles. Like I kind of think of a bubble study on an echo, which is just agitated saline, right? How is this different? You mentioned like a phospholipid and sulfur, you know, all these terms, chemistry terms here. How is it different?
Well, in terms of different from just agitated saline?
Sure. Like why use something like this? And does agitated saline give you the same kind of effect on ultrasound?
Yeah. So some of the advantages to these agents, and some of the physics, I'll be honest, is a little bit over my head,
yeah,
but
that's
the
fine.
Way
that's
the, fine. The way the bubbles kind of compress and expand as it interacts with the ultrasound wave allow for an incredibly sensitive view of each bubble. So you can really identify individual bubbles with absolutely stunning spatial resolution. And consider the fact that this is ultrasound and not something like CT or MR, you also have that temporal resolution, right? So we're seeing things enhancing in real time, not just snapshots in time that we would be having with CT, right? The non-con, the arterial, the venous phase. Well, what if somebody's cardiac output is poor? Then your arterial phase is maybe a little bit too early, or your portal venous phase isn't exactly where you wanted it to be. Here we have timers, so you can really see things enhancing. You could see bubbles escaping through, you know, small type threes, you know, endoleaks. You can really see as where this substitute for blood is actually moving. Some of the really nice applications where contrast enhanced ultrasound, at least in a diagnostic world, are very advantageous are seeing small septations and renal cysts enhancing, or seeing tumor thrombus versus bland thrombus when we're talking about the portal vein. The resolution is superior to that of CT or MRI.
Wow. Okay. So do you need a special machine then? Does the machine have to support a contrast enhanced mode, or can it be any machine?
And so that's a really good question. The machine has to be able to tolerate that software, right? So the software package for contrast enhanced ultrasound is usually a separate purchase. I mean, I won't try to pretend to know what everybody has in their labs, but we did have to purchase a separate package for one of our ultrasound machines. And so that's kind of my dedicated machine for any of the studies that I perform.
That makes sense. I mean, I find these software packages, I'm sure they're very expensive, you know, like probably half the cost of the machine, but that's how they make their money, right? When I was kind of doing some research about contrast and ultrasound, I really saw a lot of applications in kidney and liver. I think that's where a lot of the research has been. And when I was looking at pictures too, why is it always like a sepia toned picture for the contrast enhanced? Is there a reason that it's that color?
Yeah, so the grayscale next to the contrast mode is really just there to kind of help you as a guide, but the idea is decreasing the mechanical index. So that is why the grayscale, the B mode version, suffers a little bit. If the mechanical index is too high, then it ruptures the bubbles. And in fact, that's actually a nice feature that you can do when you're evaluating, let's say, enhancement or a leak, or how something is kind of how that contrast is moving. You can, for our system, I believe it's called Flash, where you hit this button where you have on wherever you're kind of looking with your ultrasound, it'll be a sudden increase in the mechanical index to rupture all of the microbubbles, and then you can see it again kind of perfusing in the right way. So in fact, yesterday we were using contrast enhanced ultrasound to try and identify an endoleak that in an EVAR that was performed by one of the vascular surgeons. And, you know, we thought we kind of had up towards the neck, and we saw contrast filling the sac very, very early. So we're like, is this a one or is this a three, an early three? And so we were able to kind of see where we thought the cranial aspect of the stent graft was. We hit that flash and then all the bubbles are ruptured. Then all of a sudden you see them, because they're still in the arterial system, kind of pouring out of the graft into the sac. So able to diagnose a 1A endo leak in real time.
Oh, that's amazing. I think still images don't really do it justice, right? I mean, you talked about the temporal resolution of this, the timing, like a twist sequence on MRI. That's where I think probably you can really see the advantages of contrast enhanced ultrasound. We briefly touched on a bunch, actually. Any other advantages that you would say of contrast enhanced ultrasound? Obviously, no radiation. Is there any adverse effects of the microbubbles? Is there I can't even think of something, like an allergic reaction?
Yeah, so anything you kind of foreign you put into the body, potential for allergic reactions. The typical agent that they talk about for allergy is to polyethylene glycol. And so really, if you don't have an allergy to the agent specifically or to PEG, it's a pretty safe, medicine, if you will. You know, obviously we use this, we kind of just adopted all the other, I guess, safety protocols that you have with like iodinated contrast or gadolinium or anything like that for allergic reactions. But other than that, it's a pretty well tolerated, medication, if you will.
Sure. I can't imagine like renal function comes into play.
No, not at all. Any of that. Not at all.
Cardiac status or pulmonary status, all of that,
No,
it's like
in fact, free
contrast agents.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, when, some of these patients that have, endovascular aortic repairs, I mean, they're patients with compromised renal function, they're patients, they might have a pacer, an AICD, they're patients that, for one reason or another, can't have MR or, maybe the whether it's the IR or the vascular surgeon is concerned about the renal function, so they don't want iodinated contrast on board. This is a great agent. In terms of graft monitoring, this is not, like, for surveillance, this is probably not the agent you want to use. And in fact, in some of the papers done on this, on using contrast enhanced ultrasound to look at endo leaks, it's too sensitive of an agent and it's going to pick up too many endo leaks.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Oh, that's perfect. That's going to parlay into a question that I'm going to have soon about specifically your protocol on bottling EVARs. But before that, I mean, one last question I had about contrast enhanced ultrasounds was that a lot of lesions are difficult to visualize. We've all seen that, HCC that was like clearly evident on MRI or CT, and then it's like, oh, maybe you're seeing it on ultrasound. In your experience, when you do contrast enhanced ultrasound, is it just that clear?
Yeah,
all the time.
Absolutely. If you have a well differentiated HCC which acts the way it should, right, arterial phase hyper enhancement, you do an injection through the IV. And this thing will really light up like gangbusters usually. I've done it on neuroendocrine tumors that, mets that were, sonographically very difficult to see, colorectal mets. And once you administer the contrast, it's very helpful for lesional guidance, in a post-surgical liver. If there's a lot of metallic clips and, some people I know do their biopsies under CT guidance, some do it under ultrasound guidance, but this is definitely an agent that you can just kind of remix popping through the IV, and it really helps you kind of identify it. And also for following the lesions, trying to see, is there still a rind of enhancement where can I place the probe under ultrasound guidance when I see this patient, try to compare it to what the MR looked like. And it's just, body positioning is totally different.
Yeah. Are you doing any kind of routine studies like a surveillance right upper quadrant ultrasound on a hepatitis patient? Are you using contrast enhanced? I can imagine that might be too hard. I mean, there's so many images and it would be hard to do contrast enhanced images routinely.
I'm not doing much of the diagnostics at my institution. When there's a problem that we try to solve, if contrast enhanced ultrasound can help, then I'll definitely step in and do the study. But for the peds, I do work with the pediatric radiologist to look at FNH, to see if something is, would have to go on for a biopsy, or do they need an MRI? Because with some of the kids, it's easier to put on a probe onto their body with some gel than to have them in an MRI.
Yeah. So kind of like a problem solving technique. Is that now, like, moving on to endo leaks, is that how that you use contrast ultrasound for that, where you have diagnosed an endo leak on a CTA or MRA, and now you're trying to figure out a little bit more about it, or how does it play into your protocol?
So we have a fantastic relationship with our vascular surgeons at
cool.
BU,
Good.
Boston Medical Center. And I approached the group a couple of years ago, just saying, "Hey, I really want to use this as a problem solving tool, as an adjunct to whatever you're doing. If you have any patients where you think, you know, they would be able to tolerate this, or they'd be, you know, they're interested in trying it out, we can compare it to the CT before you take them to angio. If there's somebody that you see kind of the sac getting larger, if there's someone that, you know, you're not happy with their renal function, you don't want to do a CTA." It's just going to do a dry scan. And like I said, you know, we work really nicely together. They said, yeah, sure, why not? So the first patient was a patient where they didn't want to give, you know, contrast because of his kidney function. And he had one of the old Endologics grafts, right? The ones from
sure.
the
okay.
ones that
yeah.
had the FDA.
The ones that used to tear at the crotch.
That's right. And so they noticed that the sac was getting larger, and they didn't know if there was an endo leak or if it was kind of the you know, just the material of the graft itself, like just ballooning out. And so we did the study, and it was, you know, in the beginning it's just a binary exam, right? You're identifying the excluded sac, the aorta, and you're giving the microbubbles to see at any point, you know, in the 7-8 minute scan, do the microbubbles enter into the excluded component of the aneurysm sac? And
yeah.
it was a totally negative study. And I have the vascular
okay.
surgeon there. I have, you know, one of my partners who does a lot of endoleak repair there, and one of my other partners, one of our senior residents. And I'm just like, look, I don't see anything. You know, this, I think there's no endoleak. And he's telling me, well, aneurysm's been getting bigger, you know, something's going on.
Yeah, something is.
And the rep for the device was there, and she's like, do you know what you're doing? You've done this before? And so they do the angio, and it's totally negative. I mean, but you know, you take your DA in the beginning, right? And you see that the graft was actually getting bigger, but there was no endoleak. I felt so vindicated at that moment.
Yeah.
So they realigned
he said,
it.
I'm right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the beginning, yeah, better lucky than good, right? Always better to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. So it's that, I mean, the resolution is that good where, I mean, I think I need to see more like videos and other stuff. You see the bubbles in the graft, and then say there's a type 2 endoleak, you can kind of see. Can you actually identify, okay, the type 2 endoleak's coming posteriorly or anteriorly, so you can kind of figure out the inflow outflow of the endoleak in a type 2?
Absolutely. So that's, you know, so if we talk about the first part of the study being kind of this binary exam, at leak, no leak, right? And then you can do another injection, right? So you do another injection of the contrast agent, and then after you've kind of determined that there is a leak, if it's filling right with that kind of early arterial phase of like that aortic phase, then you know it's got to be either a 1 or a 3. And so if it takes a little while to get there, you know it's probably a type 2. And so after you've identified, you know, after you've kind of waited a while to see, is it filling into the sac and is it early or is it a little bit later, then you try to identify where it's coming from. If you're you know, suspect is coming from the IMA, you kind of focus your ultrasound there. If you think it's coming from a lumbar, median sacral, or, you know, I had a case where it was, you know, they had coiled a hypo, you know, try to exclude the hypo to not have an endoleak. But I have these fantastic images of just kind of looking there and seeing the contrast make its way around and just come like creep up into the excluded component from the hypogastric, which had been coil embolized.
Coiled.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, I guess I just thought of something right now, and you mentioned that these bubbles are the size of a blood cell. Is that why, you know, I mean, you inject in the IV and it doesn't get caught up anywhere in the capillary bed and the lungs, it just goes straight to the arterial system?
Yeah, so it goes through the venous system to the arterial system, and you're really seeing them kind of throughout the circulation. And it's amazing how it'll follow sometimes with, you see somebody with a slow cardiac output, as just like we would see on angio, you know, Really kind of taking its
amazing.
Time.
That's amazing. Can you do, is there a volume of injection? Like, can you do a continuous, I don't know, like, can you do a, like a long injection and that gives you more arterial phases? I don't know.
Well, it'll stay in circulation, right? So you can kind of continue to see it through. And as I mentioned, you can rupture the microbubbles that really are only in your area of viewing, right? Where you've increased that kind of MI. But otherwise, you just wait for them to get out of circulation. It takes about 10 minutes. You just patients breathe it out, and it just kind of goes into the atmosphere, and then you can give another.
So slowly it gets out.
Yeah, you just give another injection.
Okay. I guess so. What about, I mean, I've had some problems looking at sacs and stuff with ultrasound. Like, well, we'll do sometimes some surveillance on patients after post-EBAR. And I mean, there's a lot of bowel can be in the way, and that how often do you find that where you're like limited in your sonographic window to do this?
I mean, quite often, you know, but it's about being persistent. It's about being comfortable with the ultrasound probe in your hand and knowing that you can get to your organ of interest, right? We've all been there doing difficult biopsies, you know, patient can't lay on their belly for a kidney biopsy. So you go from the side, you know, you're a Northwestern guy, that NEMCHECK, yeah. NEMCHECK way of doing a kidney biopsy from the side.
Yeah.
You know, so you've, you know, yesterday's patient, I had to literally go from like left lateral to see their aorta just because, you know, big old belly.
Awesome. So yeah, sure. And okay, now we've talked about like the diagnostic side of endoleak diagnosis. Now, have you used this in a procedure, like where maybe you're sticking under ultrasound and sticking the endoleak? I don't know, like, is that doable?
Absolutely. There is a group, and I can't remember who described using, you know, injecting it through their needle. As they put their needle into a lesion, they would inject through the needle. And in fact, they were able to diagnose that the lesion they were biopsying, which was negative on the prior. This was a talk at SAR, the Society of Abdominal Radiologists. They talked about how when they puffed it with Lumisan, they saw it kind of went throughout the lesion and then went into the IJ and the carotid. So they knew that it was, you know, some type of hemangioma or AVM or something where it was a vascular lesion as opposed to like a mass that you'd be concerned about.
Yeah, that's very cool. No, I mean, I think contrast enhanced ultrasound is underutilized. I mean, like I'm saying, I never had any experience with it in my residency, nor have we even thought about using it in my practice. Where would someone go to like learn about it more? For either your diagnostic colleagues or whatnot, are there courses or SIR is good or RSNA or where would people learn about this?
I think some of the diagnostic conferences, there's people giving courses and talks about it. I know at SIR, we have a poster talking about our experience with endoleaks. This, you know, the one that's coming up soon.
They can just shadow you and they can learn a ton.
I really don't think that it's anything that an interventional radiologist cannot pick up on their own. As far as, you know, lesional characterization, things like that, there is a fantastic textbook from Andre Lischik, one of the radiologists at Thomas Jefferson. He has a fantastic, you know, book just kind of describing the different pathologies that you can see with contrast enhanced ultrasound, kind of group by organ system and how they enhance and all the references. And that's been, you know, that's a book that I kind of keep really close and refer to quite often.
So it seems like you had this really cool idea about using ultrasound in this way for endoleaks. Is there anything else in your mind that you kind of future applications that you're thinking about now?
So I just want to make, I did not come up with evaluating this for endoleaks. You know, I'm nowhere near that.
I'll give you credit still. I'll give you credit still.
I mean, definitely have some ideas on how to use it in other applications. And I know a lot of different groups are doing research on it. There's, I think one of the groups out of Thomas Jefferson has done some work on microbubble destruction to augment tumor treatment. There's
like histiosonics, right? There They're doing stuff with microbubbles.
You know, I'm not sure about that. I know that they're using kind of in the area to help, with efficacy of like tumor destruction. There was a paper on using it transarterially during like TACE, where you get your microcatheter out, you have the probe on the abdomen, you give some Lumisan and see almost like a cone beam. Right, to see if you're at the area of where maximal drug delivery, you can see that's the lesion really enhancing from where your microcatheter is.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, worth saying that these are not indicated for use in the arterial system, but that's a little bit kind of kooky, right? Because the moment you put it in the vein, it ends up in the artery. And when you're using it in cardiac applications, you're looking for right to left shunts, ASDs, VSDs, so it's ending up in the arterial system.
I mean, IFU means nothing in IR, right? I mean, when are things followed by IFU?
Yeah. You know, there's all kinds of stuff like for, thinking about patients with synovitis, can you see it, especially with, how much MSK embolization is really on everybody's mind nowadays. With these being such superficial structures, the knee, the shoulder, you get your microcatheter out there. If let's say someone has a knee replacement and there's all this artifact and you can't really see very well on angio, can you give Lumisan through your microcatheter? Can you see the synovitis? Can you see it blooming? And there are definitely articles on evaluating synovitis with things like power Doppler, grayscale, color Doppler, and with ultrasound contrast. But using it in interventional application, I think you just got to think about it, right? You just think about it and then just do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, even in that idea of a pseudo cone beam, I mean, there's so many things you can do. I mean, think about, we use contrast in IR in our procedures. Just now see how we can use that with this modality. I love it. You've opened my eyes, Dave. it's really, really cool. I'm going to go explore and see what kind of software packages my hospital has to get this modality. I mean, any other things you kind of want to, lay some knowledge on regarding this modality or endo leaks as well?
Yeah, I think that it's something that almost seems intimidating, but we've done it IRs, we've done it in so many different other things that this is pretty low-hanging fruit for all of us. You know, you can do it to just be an extra kind of problem-solving tool. You can, you just see what your cardiologists are using for their whatever they already have on formulary, and you can use that, right? I mean, it's just having the same medicine that's already in your hospital wherever you are and just using that. I used a different agent because, I prefer to use the agent that I could just kind of keep on the shelf and reconstitute with, just a, three-way and a 5 cc of saline, and not have to reconstitute with like a, almost like a paint can shaker device or keep it refrigerated. That's some of the other agents. But having the Lumisan also helps because from a diagnostic standpoint, right? Sometimes we can characterize the liver lesions as a problem solver for like our tumor board patients. I remember we had to do that for a patient that was a Jehovah's Witness where it was a very high risk biopsy. So instead of doing the biopsy, we did contrast enhanced ultrasound for the lesion, and it was a great problem solving tool. Helped them avoid the biopsy and still were able to get identification of what the mass was. Yeah, I think it's something that anyone can start, take a look at, what some of the images would be. You'll be able to identify it because it's going to act exactly like you would think on angio, so you can really
look, applications are amazing. I mean, that's kind of what I like about IR, right? And about radiology and IR is just it's very innovative, it's iterative, it's innovative and revolutionary. I mean, there's things that are just coming out and you're just like, wow, where not outside of endovascular specialties, I think some are, not many innovative stuff going on. So I love it, Dave. It was really nice having you on. This was great topic. I know a lot of listeners are gonna learn a lot from this. So thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time coming on this show. And really, we appreciate it. Hope you can come back.
Very much appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, of course. And see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe, rate the podcast 5 stars, and share with a friend. If you have any questions or comments, direct message us @_backtable on Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn. Backtable is produced and hosted by myself, Aaron Fritz, and co-hosts
Chris Beck,
Sabine Dong,
Michael Barraza,
and Ali Behetti.
Our audio team is led by Kieran Gannon, with support from
Josh McWhirter,
Aaron Bowles,
Josh Spencer.
Design and digital marketing led by Brian Schmitz.
Social media and PR by Ann Dang,
Manisha Naganathanahalli,
and Manbir Singh Sundu.
Administrative support provided by Jamila Kennebrew.
Intro and extra music is Ripperoo by Skeptic Moon. Find us on Spotify or at local live music venues in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Thanks again for listening.